Welcome to Building Your T-Shirt Empire, powered by ShirtAgency.com. Get ready to take a trip inside the apparel industry for the best tips, tricks, and interviews. And now, here's your host, Cole Lundstrom.
Hello, welcome to this episode of Building Your T-Shirt Empire. This week, I've got Charlie Pangas here to talk about the do's and don'ts of graphic design and how to make some of the best merch you can possibly make. Hey, Charlie, can you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me, Cole. So I'm a graphic designer, mainly merch designer, and I also do YouTube, and I'm a teacher. That sums it up, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I saw that you had a Udemy course going through like all the ways to make great art.
Yeah, so I it was kind of a loose idea for a while, but I put together this T-shirt masterclass. So even if you're like a beginner and you don't know anything about T-shirt design, merchandise design, I take you through the ropes, and at the end you become this awesome designer.
Yeah, that's awesome. So like, what is it that you end up finding people just don't understand? Is it really basic Adobe Illustrator problems, or is it more about like the aesthetics?
I would say aesthetics for sure, because a lot of my subscribers, they know how to use the programs, but they don't necessarily know how to think about design. And I think that's like one of the main things is thinking about it differently. You could be a pro at Photoshop and a pro at Illustrator, and you can know every little tool that those programs offer you. But if you don't know how to think about the design and how to put it together to make it pleasing to the eye and make it sellable, you know what I mean? It's kind of worthless. So I think that's like the main thing that I'm good at teaching. I'm good at teaching people how to actually approach design differently.
How do you think you came to learn some of those skills? Were you at a job, or was it a college degree?
I'm all self-taught first off, and I did go to school for a short amount of time, but it wasn't for me. So I actually dropped out of college. I went to the Art Institute, and it wasn't for me. So I ended up dropping out, and I'm basically self-taught, but I did find a couple mentors along the way. I worked at a company called Merch Connection. They're great guys over there, and they're some of the best designers I've ever seen. And, you know, they kind of showed me what I was doing wrong. And I think I learned from my mistakes pretty quickly, because you have to in this business. And, they got me going pretty quick. So I definitely credit some people along the way to help me get to where I'm at right now, or that had helped me get to where I'm at right now. So it definitely wasn't just me, but I think that's what it's all about, you know, learning from your mistakes and seeing what you're doing wrong and kind of referencing other people that are great at the craft. And that's kind of how I got to where I'm at right now.
Yeah, totally. What are some of the designers or styles that you're like really into at the moment?
I mean, I when I was growing up into the field, or I say growing up, but I started about 10 years ago. And when I started, you know, I was really big into the hardcore scene, metal music. You know, I was in a couple metal bands at the time. So my influence was definitely in the metal scene. And with that being said, my style grew around the art style. And I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's, a lot of full designs that fill up the front of the whole canvas, the whole T-shirt. And so everything was really like in your face what I was doing. And I think that's, yeah, the metal scene is really what inspired me and kind of helped me craft what I'm doing today. Yeah. And you can see that in my work. If you see my work, it's definitely hand-drawn looking most of the time, and it's pretty bold for the most part.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the most recent graphics, like on your Instagram and stuff. What does the process look like to get that kind of effect? Because it looks like most of it's becoming a vector eventually. Are you hand drawing and then just doing an image trace, or because it looks really clean? Could you just walk us through that?
Yeah, definitely. It really depends on the project, but a lot of the designs I do are hand-drawn, and I do that on purpose because it gives it something unique. And it's not the same feeling when you go online and you download a vector, let's say, and you use it on your design. You don't get the same feeling as if you don't get the same feeling, when you draw something up and you take it to the computer, you trace over it with, you know, maybe I do a quick sketch in Photoshop using the drawing that I took a picture of, and then I bring it into Illustrator and vector it. That feeling right there of vectorizing your own drawing is amazing. And So I try to start with the drawing first. And sometimes, you know, if the project's really crazy, sometimes I have to go find a vector and purchase rights to use it. But it's definitely like a last resort.
Yeah.
So it's okay to be resourceful, I guess, like you can say. But it's definitely, you know, it's definitely a better thing if you draw your own stuff up. So I try to do that for every project.
Are you doing that with stuff that goes beyond like simple one and two colors, though? I mean, if you do something really, really ornate, are you turning it into a vector, or are you just doing a high res setup that you're gonna like do a sim process of later?
Well, like I think the process stays the same. If I do like a full color design, I still draw it first. I would say the vectoring process changes just a little bit, because when you think about color, you kind of have to think about your line work, because sometimes a line can be too thick to add color to, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
I think you have to be a little bit more conscious and just really put thought into the process a little bit more when you're doing color. A lot of the times when I'm doing a design, I pre-plan it a little bit before I actually start designing, because that process is so important. Because you can, like, just to give you a quick example, Cole, you can put together this awesome drawing, right? Like, let's say I sketch a nice skull for Halloween on a piece of paper. If I don't think about the line work before I start vectoring it, I might make the lines a little too thick, and it might look a little awkward when I add color to it. So there's so much that goes into the whole, you know, the whole process, I guess you can say. So I'm always thinking about that. So like I said, if I'm doing color, I'm definitely thinking about line work. I'm thinking how it can get separated. I'm thinking about what colors are going to look good on that specific design. So anyway, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it. I feel like it's kind of funny, but in this industry, I've come across so many people that come to us and they're going to spend, you know, even a grand on like a small order, and their art is not like thought out. It's not like prepared. It's crazy,
yeah,
to dedicate
the
money,
time.
But not the time.
Yeah, definitely. I see that all the time. I'm actually teaching one of my buddies right now. He came over the other day, and I was sitting down with him, showing him Illustrator, which is funny because a lot of people start off in Photoshop, and I'm starting him off in Illustrator. But we got to talking about like the whole process behind it and how there's like no thought anymore. A lot of people just do something, and they don't think about it before they do it. And you can really, I don't know about you, but you can really tell. Well, you, like you just said, you can tell a bad design from a good design. You could tell a design that had thought put into it, and it had structure, from one that doesn't have structure and that was just slapped together because somebody wants to put something on a shirt real quick to sell it to people. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That was what I feel like was a lot of the problem with some of the, when Teespring kind of just blew up, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing how much money people would spend on advertising for horrible, horrible art. It would just say, like, my grandma's cool or whatever, and it was so disappointing because the print-on-demand kind of revolutionized the way people can sell T-shirts online, and people just, what they should have been focusing on was quality art, and instead they were focusing on targeting demographics.
Yeah, and, you know, I just got into that with, like, not too long ago with this Amazon, Merch by Amazon group, because, you know, as you know, Merch by Amazon's one of the most popular ones growing right now. And I talked to so many people, and a lot of people are so stuck in this mindset. Like you said, they say, you know, let's design something for this demographic, even if it's the crappiest design you've ever seen, because yeah, we're still going to sell it. But it makes me cringe in a way. I don't know if you've seen all my videos. I'm sure you haven't watched every single one, but I made a video talking about quality over quantity. And I believe in that. I really do. I think that you should focus on quality over quantity, because you can make a ton of really crappy designs, but there's just nothing good about that. You know what I mean? And
well, money, but yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, money, but,
I
see it all the time.
I
see it all the time.
And I feel like people forget how much they're going to hurt their brand because, yeah, I might buy something because you happen to know that I was born in February in 1986, but I'm not going to have any loyalty to that brand whatsoever if
right,
I feel like
right,
it's a cheap quality blank and it's a bad piece of art, and it's, you don't get that long-term customer. You end up with somebody who gets it kind of as a gag. And I feel
right,
like that's why some of those companies had like really big spikes and then burnt out. I saw multiple people hit like, you know, $2-3 million in sales, and fast forward to now they make like maybe $200,000 in sales. Because
yeah,
I think a lot of
definitely,
people got burnt out by ads.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me though, I guess I cater to a different demographic. I have different subscribers than those people that are like print on demand all the way. You know what I mean? So I cater to different people. The people I cater to or the people I help, I guess I can say, is the people that want to build an empire. And I always let them know it's not going to be overnight. Obviously that doesn't happen like that. But I talk to people that really care about the longevity of their brand, because I know you mentioned that. But I'm also, I have a lot of these people that are just, they're just down to have one hit wonders on Amazon or Merch by Amazon or any other print on demand sites. And they expect that to be the golden child. But I always have to remind them that that's a short road to live. You know, it's not going to last forever. You might, it depends on who you're talking to too, because there's those people that don't really care as much either. You know, they just want to make some quick money. But anyway, I'm always fighting against it. You know, I feel like I'm on this push and pull thing right now with those kind of people. But
yeah, you're fighting the good fight, trying to keep the art alive.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to keep the art alive. I love seeing good art and I hate seeing bad art. And it's just, I can never be on the side of bad art. You know, I just feel like it just doesn't work out for me. It makes me look bad. And I don't know. I feel like I've kind of become a public figure in this whole realm here, you know?
Yeah,
I didn't mean to be, but now I feel like I have to really keep the standards high,
well,
if that makes sense.
That's the weird magic of YouTube is you can go from no one knowing who you are to a few hundred thousand views on a video, and it can get kind of shocking and happen really quickly.
And I think that's what happened with me is I was just some kid that liked designing band merch, and I had like, you know, I was like that kid that got really excited when my shirt got put in Hot Topic. You know what I mean? Like, if I seen one of my shirts in Hot Topic, I was like raving for about a week, 2 weeks, and I probably annoyed the crap out of my friends. But that's the kid I was, you know? And then, then I started my first YouTube video or my first channel and then made my first video. And next thing you know, it has 400,000 views. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess we're going to keep doing this, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, you learn as you go. And it's funny because I thought I knew so much back then, but you learn so much. And the amazing thing about the internet now, and I'm sure you can agree with me, is you kind of learn from people. You learn from each other. And I feel like I learned a lot from my subscribers, what they like to see and what they don't like to see. And it kind of made me a better designer at the same time. So I don't know. I have a lot of things to credit towards my success. And I guess I'm not that successful yet. But, you know, a lot of people really have helped me. And the internet does that to you, man.
Yeah,
and who would have thought that I would create a Udemy course and get 130 students? It's insane.
Yeah, the internet is a magical place. It kind of blows my mind what you can accomplish with it, and it's just so fluid. Like, the internet doesn't seem to care about what you did so much as like
right
what you're doing today, which is exciting because it means that people aren't trying to put out like a TV show. They're trying to put out something that's new and interesting, regardless of the schedule, regardless of the budget. Somebody can be fascinating for free on their cell phone, and someone else can spend 10 grand and like no one cares. So I like,
yeah, exactly.
I like just the democracy of it.
Me too. I mean, I guess you get like a lot more, you just get genuine people on the internet now. I mean, obviously there's going to be channels out there that are faked and stuff and scripted, and you know what I mean? But it's really good to see some genuine content, some real content, because you watch TV every day, right? And you kind of remember where things started. And it used to be, it's so fake sometimes on TV, but YouTube, it became this real thing, and people they hit play and they do it, you know? And that's kind of what I did. And it's crazy that you can even make a dime doing that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't have some big production crew, Cole. It's like, it's just me. And you know, my girlfriend helps me sometimes. I'm proud of that. Sometimes she helps me set up stuff. But for the most part, it's let's hit play and see what happens. Let's teach people something cool, and let's we're making money doing it. And that's where it like kind of where it shocks me, because back then, man, I remember starting a t-shirt brand in my garage. It's kind of embarrassing, but me and my buddies from middle school, we started printing some shirts. My dad bought a really cheap machine. It was like a four press. Had four screens on it.
Yeah.
You know the one that rotates, not the fancy ones nowadays.
Yeah.
But he bought one of those, and I just remember how hard it was to find people to sell to. And now, you know, MySpace was kind of a thing back then. It was starting to be like around that time. Like, I didn't really know much about it, but it was a thing. But it was so hard to find people to buy. I used to have to take the shirts to school, and it's crazy because I can go on Instagram and YouTube right now and sell thousands. It's like, I don't get it, but it's it's the way things are going. And I think it's so easy for people to like gain that exposure now, you know?
Yeah, I did
and
it's same thing in college. I had like 6 or 7 shirts at the bottom of my backpack because
right.
I brought it up. I could just like, they could say, oh, that's cool. And then force their size on them.
Dude, I use my mom's plastic wrap to keep them nice.
Oh, classy.
That's a premium brand right there. Dude, for sure. Right? I mean, you have to like really put it. I mean, nowadays, you know a good brand from a bad one when you get a package and it's not wrapped. And then when it is wrapped, you're like, wow, that they put some effort. That's what I did, man. But I did the whole plastic wrap thing. My mom used to get so mad at me. I stole all of her plastic wrap and I was wrapping all the shirts. And I didn't even know how to fold a shirt at the time. But... yeah, that's where I started, man. So it's crazy to see where we come from. And I guess the whole point of this is people that want good quality shirt designs, they have so much access to it now that it's insane. You don't have to go to school for it. You can teach yourself online and you can be an amazing designer and you can get great quality art if you know where to look.
Yeah.
And that's because of the internet and where it's kind of social media and stuff like that. So anyway, mind blown. That's what it does to me every day. I wake up and I look at my apps and I'm like, wow, people care.
How do you feel like, I mean, I don't even know if you're doing this because it sounds like a lot of this happened pretty organically for you, but how do you feel like you're actively trying to expand like your social media influence? Are you just focusing on the content and that's it? Or do you have like an ad spend, or how exactly are you expanding at the moment? Because you do have an unbelievable amount of competition in your space.
Yeah, I do. I've never ran an ad, actually. Never ran an ad. I did on another channel that I was trying to start up. I was trying to do a gaming thing, which is also embarrassing, but it didn't work. Let's put it that way. I put I think I put $100 into it to test it out. It was a terrible idea. I wasted money. but for my main project, which is my Charlie Pangus channel, my main channel, that's all organic. My Instagram is for the most part organic. I do a little promoting on there, like manually, like following people and like liking photos and contacting new followers, letting them know what I do.
You're like your
I do
own
that
bot.
All. Yeah, exactly. I have my own bot, which is it's tedious. So yeah, I basically grew my channel organically. I spent very little, like I said, on ads and stuff like that, and I just kind of went with it. I didn't know much about growing actually when I started. I just knew that if I uploaded a video, there's a chance it might get some hits on YouTube with their old algorithm. And sure enough, I got some hits, and it's kind of a luck game too, but I guess I'm lucky enough to gain subscribers. I'm over 40,000 now, which is insane to think about. But yeah, YouTube treated me good, I guess you can say, and I got lucky and I got some subscribers out of it. But recently I've gotten a lot smarter, you know, after taking some SEO courses and stuff like that. I've learned that there's more to it. So I'm definitely paying attention to my keywords, my descriptions, my tag, everything. Like tags in the descriptions, and there's so much more that goes into it. Even the thumbnail, the video quality, the audio quality. I'm actively paying attention to all that, and it's in the back of my mind at all times. So I'm learning how to do it professionally now. But back then I was just some kid uploading videos, and it took me a lot of places. And I've gotten some really cool sponsorships. I've met some awesome people because of it. So it's a beautiful thing, man. Not only am I growing organically, but I'm meeting people without having to put much effort into it because I don't have to go to a coffee shop and meet people. I can just, people come to me and they want to be my friend. And it's like, hey, I'm special now, but not really.
<That's awesome. laughs>
You know what I mean?
Who were some of the like, you know, clients to brag about that you really were surprised you got the order for? I mean, have you been working with some of the bigger bands or?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, coming from the metal industry or the metal genre of music and working with all these metal labels, record labels like Ferret Records, Rise Records, Sumerian Records, I've worked with some of the biggest dogs out there, Metal Blade. The one band that I mean, I hope you don't mind if I shout them out, but Thy Art Is Murder is one of my top favorite bands, metal bands. They're just so organic and raw. And they're just a great Australian band. And I had the pleasure of not only kind of becoming friends with the guitarist, but also designing some stuff for him. And it was awesome, dude. It was a great experience. And I was kind of fanboying, but I didn't tell him, you know? Like, he's probably going to listen to this and be like, wow, I knew you were a fan. Because I told him, I kind of heard of you guys when I first met him. I was kind of like, you know, kind of dumbing it down. Yeah, I played it cool. So I was like, yeah, I heard about you guys. I heard a few songs. You guys are pretty good. You know, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my God, I'm designing for this band that I listen to all the time and I love them, you know? So anyway, So that's one band, and I've designed for so many more. I mean, Oh Sleeper, I can keep naming them, but I had the pleasure to design for a lot of big bands. I don't know if you heard of a band called Our Last Night, but they're big on YouTube.
Yeah.
And yeah, Our Last Night, they make a lot of covers on YouTube, and they have like over 1 million subscribers, but I had the pleasure of designing for them too. So yeah.
That's awesome. Do you feel like you kind of stay in your lane graphically? I mean, you've definitely got your core design work is very kind of classic, like one colors, two colors, kind of, there's a fair amount of skulls. Do you feel like you stay in your lane in that sense, or do you sometimes kind of get pushed and branch out beyond that to designs that you wouldn't normally be naturally drawn to?
Behind the scenes, I do a lot of different work that people, I don't necessarily show people because it doesn't really vibe with what I do, but I still do it because I have a skill set. Like first and foremost, I have a trade that I'm good at something, you know? And, with that being said, I use those skills when I have to. If, you know, I have to pay the bills, so I do take on projects that I'm not that excited about, let's say. And I know that sounds terrible, but I try to test myself, and that's what I look at. When people reach out to me and they want something that's like completely out of the realm of what I do, I still take it on because it's a challenge. And I think that as a designer, you have to challenge yourself to get better. So I try to do that. But as far as what I do try to stay on one path because I hate to say this, but a lot of the designers that are doing one style are doing so good on Instagram right now. You know, there's so many of them out there that are doing one style and they're really getting good at just amazing at that one style. And they're pushing out the same style every single day. And I think that it's repetitive, but it's their style and people remember them for it. It's almost like a photographer taking black and white images only. It's the same kind of thing, you know? So there is a good thing about it, but at the same time, it can make me think, well, I don't know if I want to get stuck in that one genre, you know?
Yeah, but, well, and it's interesting. I mean, one of my friends, Casey, works for WEA, which is like Warner Entertainment. So he does a lot of the illustrations for album covers specifically.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying like he's one of those guys that do like the metalhead covers. He can do like the crazy dripping demon that's like just totally sick and ridiculously detailed. But he was saying that he actually gets burnt out on his own art. He's like begging them to let him do like a weird disco cover just because he wants to like feel like he's expanding.
Even though
he kind of has the dream job over there at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. That's really, really a great point. You can definitely get burned out doing the same thing too. And that's kind of where I was going with it a little bit. You kind of helped me there. It's just one of those things where if you do it too much, you can get burned out. And the thing with this kind of, and this whole, I want to call it a career, but sometimes it's a love-hate relationship. That's the way I look at it. Anything creative, I think that you can get burned out when there's too much repetition going on, the same style going on. And if you don't adventure out, it can hurt you in the long run and you might give up. A lot of people give up because they don't know. They get writer's block, you know? They get the designer block and then they don't know what to design anymore because they're just so mentally worn out. And I find myself getting in that groove sometimes where I'm doing the same type of thing all the time. And then I'm just like not feeling fulfilled inside, if that makes sense. And like back to what we were saying, doing something different is definitely like kind of a some fresh air, if you will. And that helps a lot. And then you can go back to what you're used to doing, you know, but it's good to throw some of those random projects in there. Kind of like what your friend's saying, you know, with the disco project, that's his fresh air right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
He's so much metal.
Yeah, definitely.
Also,
definitely.
He throws the best Halloween parties on the planet. So.
That's awesome. That's a skill.
That's a skill. I mean, that's.
Yeah, it is.
You should get paid a whole year's salary for a good Halloween party.
Some people suck at it, so.
So what would you recommend to, you know, the imaginary customer who's 20 years old and is starting from absolute scratch, small budget, what kind of path would you put them down? Is there a trend you see coming? Is there a niche? What would you tell them?
Like as far as just like design related goes, like what kind of advice would I give them as far as that goes?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they'll print it at Shirt Agency, so.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's weird because things change so fast nowadays. It changes so fast. You never know what's trending anymore unless you really, you know, back then we used to keep the newspaper on lockdown, like our parents would have it next to their bed kind of sometimes, or in the morning with their coffee, that to keep up to date with everything. That's kind of their trend report. But with this, the way things are going with social media and just these new millennials growing up, things change so fast and you never know what's the next popular thing. So for me, I kind of have to, I find myself like kind of searching the web a lot to see what's popular, what's selling. So that's what I do really like to see. Like if a client comes up to me and they need something done and they say, you know, I want something that sells, I want something that looks great, I tend to reference what's current. And that's just part of the process. So I you know, I just had a customer come up to me and they say, you know, I don't know what I want. I don't know what's popular. I don't know anything about, it's like, it was some skate brand, you know? So I did a lot of research on Nike, SB, you know what I mean? And just figured out what's selling, what's doing good, and kind of made it my own though at the same time, because I think that uniqueness, that unique factor helps sell too. So I don't know. I always tell my graphic design clients that, you know, I always give them the options and I show them references to what's current and I try to help them out, because it is kind of a pain in the, I don't know if I can cuss, but I was going to say ass. It's a pain in the ass process.
I'm going to allow ass.
Okay, we can allow ass. I was like skeptical. I was like, I don't know if I should say ass or not. But anyway, it's a pain in the ass process. So that's the last one, I promise. But yeah, I try to help them out and I try to keep them current with the new generation here, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in a lot of ways, there is an element of like staying true to yourself and not being a copycat. But you know, if yourself is completely out of date, you could have a hard time selling. So,
right.
Definitely knowing what's cool,
right,
will help, even if you don't mimic it.
I mean, it's always nice to have a client come up to me and say, "Hey, Charlie, I like your vintage style," because I do a hand-drawn style a lot of the times. And I do a lot of grunge and texturing and all that stuff. It's nice to have a client come to me and say, I want something that you already do. That's awesome. That makes me happy because I know I can be true to myself and do what I love doing. But then you got those people that come up to you that do want something a little more. Because I wouldn't say what I do is that. I mean, I guess it's kind of trendy. Would you say it's trendy? I guess it is a little bit.
I mean, I don't think.
With the whole.
Well, I mean, it's been trendy for 100 years. I mean, if I saw this on a tattoo or something, it. You know, it could be from a lot of different decades. You do
definitely.
Have a, you have a very classic illustrative style as opposed to like anything that's like, oh, that's the 80s.
Right, right. I like vintage, though. I'm a big fan of vintage. And I do think that I love designs that can hold true 100 years later. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm a big fan of Aaron Draplin. I know you probably know who he is. His stuff is timeless, you know, and I think that's part of it, too, is like creating something that's timeless. And it's funny because you can have the most trendiest design that's going to sell really well, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be popular in 2 weeks. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So for me, the trendy things doesn't mean it's always going to be a good thing either. Sometimes trendy designs, let's say, I guess I'm referring to anything that's popular. Like skulls are pretty popular right now. I noticed a lot of people are doing it, but it doesn't necessarily mean people are going to start loving it a month from now. People might stop liking it and they might like something else. So I know growing up I wore, you know, Obey a lot and I got tired of it really quick, the art style really quick, and I stopped wearing it. So I don't know, anything
yeah,
trendy
got, Shepherd Fairey's gotta up his game.
What a... Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just got so it got played out, you know. That's what
come
I'm
on
trying to...
Shepherd, what's going on?
Hey, I love him, you know. I think he's great. But as a teenager, when I was a teenager, you know, I'm talking freshman year of high school here.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, man. It was cool for a little bit, but it's not timeless. Like I just don't like it anymore.
It's kind of Ed Hardy syndrome. I mean, I feel like that's happened to a lot of brands. Like,
definitely.
Massive everywhere, and then it's Ross, and they can't give it away for free.
Yeah. How cool was it though?
It
remember
was so
that?
Damn cool.
It was so cool. And it like what, like a couple years down the road, Ed Hardy kind of sucks now.
Yeah, all of a sudden it was $15 at Ross, and they still had too much stock.
And they got the same stock from like 4 years ago. I don't know how long the brand's been around, by the way. I don't do that much research on them, but they've been around for a good minute. And I always notice the same freaking style of art on the bottles, and I'm like, that must be the same bottle from like 3 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, I don't even know. It's weird how people can get actually too famous for their own good. Like, you can get to a point where the audience can resent you. Like, they don't want to be an Ed Hardy type of person because they know some guy who they think is a jerk.
Right.
It's like a certain aesthetic can actually get a whole bad vibe.
Yeah, definitely. Like, hey, I'm gonna tell you this right now, Cole. I am a big believer of simplicity. I almost messed that up, but simplicity is so key. I found that so many brands that are simple do so well, and they have such a longevity to them that is so respectful. You can respect that. And then you got something like what we were talking about. You got something that with a crazy art style like Ed Hardy that's super trendy that just died out and nobody cares anymore. I don't even think anybody thinks about it. That I should do a video, dude. I'm going to go on the streets and I'm going to ask everybody.
Ed Hardy.
Have you heard of Ed Hardy? What's your memory of Ed Hardy? And see what they say. Just see what they say. They're probably going to be like, oh, I saw it at Target a long time ago. You know, they're not going to say, oh, my God, it smells so good. My boyfriend has it right now. I love it. You know, anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I feel like Supreme right now could go one of two ways. They could go the Ed Hardy route and really burn out their audience, or they could sustain it more like a Nike kind of a company. It'll be interesting to see how they play it.
Yeah, I think Nike's so impressive because, well, it goes back to the simplistic thing too, because they are very simplistic in their marketing and the way their clothes are and stuff like that. Their logo's very simplistic. I think Ed Hardy could survive if they redid the branding. I just think that it's too flashy for me, personally.
Yeah, it's like and embarrassing. I don't want a sparkly really tiger all over me.
No, and you know, I remember them, they came out with some new packaging and I was like cringing over it. Like I remember sitting, I know it's kind of ridiculous, but I think I was at Kohl's and I was sitting there for like a good 30 minutes staring at the packaging as I always do with things. Yeah. And I was just like shaking my head. My girlfriend's like, what are you doing? And I was just like, this is just making me want to vomit right now. Because the lack of care, like we just talked about care, right? Like putting some care into things, and it just, they had such a lack of care and such a lack of originality. It's been done millions of times. So anyway, I think Nike does a great job, dude. I don't know how they're doing it, but they stay simple. They stay true. I think Supreme can definitely stay on that bandwagon if they do it right. But there's some things I see from Supreme and I'm like, oh man, maybe now. And like, you know what I mean?
Well, they're hype monsters. I mean, I personally don't buy anything from Supreme. Like, I don't think they're as approachable as a Nike. To me,
No, definitely not.
I need good sports shoes, so I'll buy Nike shoes, even if I'm not buying the clothes.
Right.
Whereas Supreme is like, it's a white t-shirt with a screen print. So it's all about hype for them. They're a little different than Nike in that way.
Yeah, I think you can consider Supreme like the younger sister of Nike.
Yeah.
The younger sister. They have a middle sister. And then they're the brother, obviously, the big brother. So yeah, it's just the little sister. But I think they're doing all right. I definitely agree with you. I think they are the hype of the whole industry right now.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's like, man, being a YouTuber, I see all the trendiness going on, and you got like your Jake Paulers and stuff like that, you know. And I feel like that's like what Supreme is. Like a lot of those kids are wearing Supreme, and I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like Neistat what video where he was walking around with a Supreme bag, like a giant ad for the whole video.
Yeah, right. I did see that.
It's just
probably an ad, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just
nonchalant.
They don't call it an ad, but it's just freebies and whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. But yeah, I hope it. I don't know. I like to see brands succeed. I think Supreme's doing good. It's definitely doing better than Obey. Obey didn't last very long. I talked to a few designers about it, and they kind of just forgot about Obey. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what happens when you don't change things up.
I understand, Shepard sold the rights to Obey for like a royalty deal. So Shepard had like essentially nothing to do with it. And then there's some print shop in like the OC that controls the whole Obey line now.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I don't know if the production's actually happening in the OC or if they're just like running it in like Mexico. But from what I understand, he basically has nothing to do with it anymore.
Oh, well, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
You take out the founder, the creator of something, then that kind of it's like Steve Jobs passing away. Apple's not the same anymore, in my opinion. I can see a lot of changes that I don't think he would approve of.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just you take out that person that started it all, it's kind of not the same anymore. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's why I don't like it anymore.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I was at a Shepherd Fairey show maybe like 9 months ago, and he looks nothing like Obey anymore. I mean, his new work is so intricate and very much different colors than Obey, different art styles. He's evolved way beyond that whole look that was bigger, like 10 years ago.
Right. So he's obviously bigger than that now. You know, he's grown past that. That's always good. You know what? I need to check out his new work. I haven't actually done that. I know he's on Instagram and stuff like that, but.
He's got kind of like it almost reminds me of like a 40s radio logo or something, like really intricate, like sunbursts and stuff that are just massively time consuming. I know that he does some of his poster prints down here in LA at Modern Multiples. And so they'll knock out like 1,000 posters that he'll sign, and they do them all screen printed and all, he like stands there and babysits all the printing because it needs to hit his standards now. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. I'm glad it's cool that he cares so much. Anybody that's creative that cares that much, you got to respect that. You know, that's just such some people I see a lot of like careless people out there that create art and they don't care how it's distributed. They don't care about the background stuff, you know. Sending it off. They send it off and they're like, all right, well, I'll see you later, dude. Nice designing you. Catch you later. But it's always cool when you actually become part of the process. When you become like part of it, it means more. And I think people can latch onto it a little bit more as well, if that makes sense. So.
Yeah, totally. I was looking through some of your main designs that you're showing like on your website, and it looks like you have some favorite fonts. Could you name some of these fonts that you've got going on that you're using more than once?
Oh, man. I'm a big fan of like bold face. I just like bold faces and stuff like that. I use a lot of like sans serif. The one that I'm using right now that I actually bought, I'm kind of like a font guru guy right now. I mean, not font guru. That's a terrible way to put it. I just spend a lot of money on fonts sometimes, and I shouldn't, but...
Do you buy stuff by house or who are you buying them from?
I buy them from like different markets. Like I use Creative Market sometimes. They're a really good resource. But I got this one called Classic. It's spelled with a K, and it's a great font. And I use that a lot because it's a hand drawn font. And I'm not, you probably can tell I'm not a typography type guy. I've never been. I know how to do it a little bit right now, and I'm trying to get better at it. But it's definitely my weak suit. So. When I can go and find great fonts, I try to whenever I can, you know, whenever I can afford to buy them. So Classic's one of them. I was talking about Aaron Draplin earlier, but I use his new font called DDC Hardware. It's an amazing font. And if anybody's out there they need to check it out. DDC Hardware is a great font and they should definitely purchase rights to it because it's phenomenal. And you could tell somebody, you know, you could tell a great designer did it. And it's simple stuff, you know, like putting text around a circle. The font just works beautifully around a circle. And some fonts look awkward around a circle, if that makes sense. So
yeah, for sure. They it just makes like a weird.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the arc doesn't quite fit nicely. And that's something I consider, too, when I'm downloading fonts. I like to test it real quick and download a free version and see if it works for what I. And I put it through its test, you know, like you'd put a Toyota through. Like different tests to see if the body holds up. You know, it's the same thing for the font. I test it through these things, texturing, arcs, slants, everything, and see what it does. And DDC Hardware is great. Classic's great. I was trying to look at online right now. You know, I pay for the Adobe Creative Cloud, and they have something called a type kit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love it, and I recommend everybody use it. But they have a bunch of fonts that you're allowed to use, and I always check them out. Sometimes they add new ones, but they have some solid fonts on there as well. So
yeah, I got Nexa in the type kit, and I love Nexa. It's a really
Nexa's a great font.
It's a clean little font.
Yeah, I love Nexa, definitely. Yeah, I do try to stick with fonts I like just because it kind of sticks. It kind of makes it look like more of my style, what I go for. I mean, on projects I don't really promote a lot. Like if I have like a company hit me up and they need some like a poster made, I tend to use way different fonts than what I use on my Instagram because that's kind of me trying to trademark myself, you know, trying to brand myself. So I try to keep things consistent with what I do. But yeah, I definitely try to like use different fonts for like larger companies that are more, you know,
they need their own look.
It's Yeah, they need their own look, and it's just a different project. It's different than what I do, and you'd be surprised if you see some of the work I do on the site. You'd be like, "You did that?" Because it's so different, you know.
Yeah.
I've done album covers where it was a full image manipulation, and nobody would ever know that I did it. But again, I don't really promote that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah. Can you walk everybody through how you do these vintage effects? Because you have a really clean, finished vintage look on your art, and I hear people trying to do it or requesting it from us, and I'd love to hear how you're doing it, because yours is just so consistent, and you're doing it in vectors. You're not just like throwing a filter in Photoshop.
No, I don't like using Photoshop for texture anymore, simply because when I started designing, I used Photoshop for texturing. But if you zoom in Photoshop, obviously it's pixel-based, so you're going to see a lot of nasty noise that you don't want in a design, and somebody's going to have to clean it up anyway later on if they plan on doing a high-quality print on it.
Yep.
So I do texturing in Photoshop sometimes, but it has to be, like, the best quality texture you can get. Like, I'm talking 3,000, sometimes 1,000 resolution. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, really high quality. But in Illustrator, I find it just so much easier. And the process is really weird because let's say I design something in Illustrator, I can kind of walk you through it if you want the full process.
Yeah, go for it.
So, you know, when I design something in Illustrator, I tend to like expand it, and then I use my pencil tool to round corners to give it that hand-drawn look. I sometimes roughen it up a little bit. And then what I do is I rasterize it, and I take off and I actually turn on transparency. So I don't have a white background. Let's say we're working on a white canvas. And then after I rasterize it, I add something called it's called Pixelate. Mesotint, I think is what they call it. Mesotint, I can't remember right now. But I add a mesotint to it.
That's already in Illustrator?
It's already in Illustrator, yeah. It's great.
Yeah, I haven't used that before. What tool window is that in?
That's in Effects. Okay. You go to Pixelate, I think it is, and then Mesotint. And then you can do some coarse grains. You could do fine grains. Then there's line grains. And you can do just incredible stuff. You can make your texture look like wood texture. Excuse me. So I use that a lot. And then I image trace it after. And what it does is it kind of embeds that texture into your design. And then you can ignore white. And then you have a full black design that's, excuse me, textured and ready to go. And you can put on a transparent background right away. So that's my process, and I had a good friend teach me that. And I feel like I should probably tell you his name, because he's the one that taught me that.
Yeah, what's his name?
Jordan Jameson.
Jordan Jameson. Yeah, I mean, that's actually amazing, funny, because it's so different than the way we actually do it. So
yeah,
it's a pretty cool process.
So I don't know if you've seen texture that has like kind of particles on the design, like kind of blending in. Like, let's say you have a black and white design, right? You have black strokes, thick strokes, and you texture it. Some people have these, like, you know, textures that are kind of like part of the black, but they're kind of like peeking out of it as well, peeking out of the lines, kind of like a shatter look, you know, and it's just really broken up. Like somebody took that design and threw it on the concrete and stepped on it and just moved it around. So to do that, you just, when you're rasterizing it, you just don't check transparency. And then when you image trace it after adding the texture, it will keep some of those particles in there.
Yeah, it's kind of flying around.
Yeah, it will kind of fly around. Looks like you kind of splattered some texture on it. And sometimes that can look cool. So, and then you can erase what you don't like. I work kind of destructively in there, because I can literally take it and erase all the different texture lines I don't like and fine-tune it.
When you're doing that stuff in Illustrator, are you doing it on a Wacom tablet or an iPad, or is this all just mouse?
I use a tablet. I have a couple people that sent me some on YouTube, so I use those right now. I have one called XP Pen, and I use one called, I butcher the name, and I'm going to try, I think it's Huon. It's a weird name. Huon, I think that's right, but I use one of those as well, and it's more of your traditional bamboo type tablet from Wacom, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I use what I, yeah, and they're not the best, but they get me by, so.
Sweet. So how about, could you just let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and learn more about you, or if they just wanted to actually have you do some design work, what's the best way for them to hit you up?
The best way to hit me up is definitely going to be on Instagram, and you can look me up at Charlie Pangus. My name is spelled L-E-Y at the end, and then my last name's P-A-N-G-U-S. And so Instagram's definitely the best place to find me. And then you can also hit me up on YouTube. I'm always looking at my comment section. If you guys want to watch some videos and contact me on there, I will reply on there as well. And that's just youtube.com/CharliePangus.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for stopping by. I feel like it was just so interesting to hear your take on design because that's what you're focusing on every single day. It's pretty cool to see like somebody just grinding on art all the time. I live in such a print world and we appreciate the art, but we just don't do the work the way you do.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's definitely, like I kept telling you in the beginning, it's a love-hate relationship, but I definitely love what I do. And I do believe that the hustle is real with design, but it's, like I said, I love it, so I do it. And it's a beautiful process when it's all said and done. I do appreciate you having me on this podcast, too. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks, Cole.
Well, I guess that's the end of this episode. So thanks so much to everyone who listened, and have a great week.